Okay, anyway, we got quite a shiz. Hook me up. Is it hooked? Hooked. Okay. This is both working. All right, ready to roll. My dear students, it is Monday morning. It is the 18th of February, 2013. Our final shiur before Purim. The week after Purim, we pick up again. The week after that, we pick up Sunday North Shiur, Monday press conference, and then the break for Pesach. So the year is ticking away. It's hard to believe, but that's the way life runs. I said to someone, I was Menachem Mavel Thursday, my Talmud Dr. Ari Teitelbaum. So as I was leaving, I told him, besides Nichem Mavel, I said to him, the year should go by quickly. So this lady jumped on me. What do you mean the year? What are you rushing? I said, Ari understands me. When you're an Avelet, it's a tremendous responsibility. You want to get Kaddish. You want to be on time. You're always looking at your watch. You have to figure out where you're going to chap mincha. And it's a responsibility. So that's all I meant. Also, you can't go to a simcha. There are all types of shilas. If anyone has ever figured out in a year of Avelis, can you go to a Kiddush on Shabbos? All right, we can talk about that for endless hours. It says a low pasher. Everyone answers Shabbos. No, Shabbos is Simchat Mereyot. It's not so simple. Do you go to Kiddush every Shabbos? If you go to a certain Kiddush every Shabbos, then we can find the Hetta B'Shefi very easily. Because then if you're not there, it's Avelet V'Prehesi of B'Shabbos. But what about if it's a Kiddush Amol and Yovel? Your distant cousin is getting married and it's a nufruf and they're making a catered affair. Are you allowed to go? I don't even answer because I don't want to cause problems for people. Okay. So what do we do until now? We saw Rabbi Revel, Rabbi Leventhal was the kingmaker. As I mentioned to you, Rabbi Shechta, Rabbi Heschel told me he never met Leventhal, doesn't remember Leventhal. If we could bring his father back to life, we would know about Rabbi Leventhal. I told him things about his father's relationship with Rabbi Leventhal that he didn't know about. So I was very close. Again, you have to understand, I was a Ben Bayit in the Shachta house. How many families were there in the Bronx? And Heshi was my brother's chavrut, the Levi and Heshi learned together for many years. So I was a Ben Bayit. Heshi had an older sister who I knew. She was my age approximately, I would say. And I still remember his parents, his mother crying to me, what will be with Heshi? He doesn't pay attention to his general subjects. He just concentrates on Gemara. How will he make a living? And I figured out that the Rav Heschel Shechter gives more to Tztucker in a year than I make. You understand? Baruch Hashem. So we once made a cheshbon, and I told him I'm way beneath what he gives the Maisa every year, way beneath that, but I'm no complaints whatsoever. Baruch Hashem. My wife may have complaints, but I don't. So you see, Rabbi Leventhal was the kingmaker. Rabbi Revel and Rabbi Belkin were created by Rabbi Leventhal, plain and simple. There's a lot of interest in Rabbi Zivitz. Rabbi Zivitz certainly played a role. Rabbi Zivitz certainly played a role in the Shidduch. Rabbi Zivitz, I'm told, was to the Masada Kedushin when Rabbi Revel got married. But with all is said and done, the kingmaker who lived in Philly, but as to paraphrase the Gemara in Psachim, but his net spread to New York, was Rav Dov Aryeh Cohen Leventhal. Rabbi Leventhal organized Talmudical Academy. Again, when I say organizing a high school, you look at me, what's the big deal? This was the first yeshiva high school in the United States that had to get accreditation. And that's why he remained very dankbar, very grateful to those who helped him. Josh, you wonder why I'm stressing that? You'll understand in a few weeks' time. There's a reason why I'm stressing that. It's a very important reason because it gives you a key to understanding the big scandal that shook the yeshiva in the mid-30s. He looked for frum people. He found Horowitz. He found Stern. Horowitz died in the influenza epidemic. Stern became associated with Torah Vadas. He lived in Brooklyn. But mainly the people who helped were East European Jews, of their parents at least, who were no longer observant, but felt the connection to help a yeshiva high school. Besides the yeshiva high school, he organized the rabbinate, And 1919, when the first students graduated, that is a red-letter day in golden letters in the history of Torah in America. Five students, all who went into rabbinical careers, pachot or yoter, graduates of the yeshiva, trained in America. That was a great moment, and I read to you Rabbi Rivel's speech, which was revolutionary, the way he spoke. But then again, you wonder how a man who came to America just less than 10 years earlier, how did he get, at that time, 1919 already, was 13 years earlier, how did he get such magnificent English? And there I told you his ghostwriter, Joseph Shipley, and Shipley, an interesting character, as I mentioned, from the original Yeshiva College faculty, professor of English, married, not married. I told you the trap I fell into. I don't even know, I don't believe he was Jewish. I think his father was Jewish, his mother was not, but he was an Ohev Yisrael and an Ohev Dr. Revel, and he was his ghostwriter. Revel would give him the ideas or write the initial draft, and Shipley would perfect it. And I found speeches that Rabbi Revel gave where you see Shipley's handwriting fixing the English or adding to the English. It was an interesting relationship. But Rabbi Revel mastered English, and although he studied in personal speech, when he spoke he was magnificent. Teachers Institute enters the yeshiva, and I explained to you how, and that's why I said Rabbi Revel's not taking money was a plus and a minus, a pro and a con. On one hand, not to take money, to be financially independent is fabulous. But on the other hand, it means you have responsibilities beyond the institution. And if you have responsibilities beyond the institution, ultimately that can knock out your participation in the institution. And while Rabbi Ruh's gone, Teachers Institute comes in, and I explained to you the inferences, the implications of Teachers Institute and all that that means for the future. Because my uneducated guess is very simple, that all the enmity and hatred to YU, you know, I was once walking to the Kotel, so you know, I'm a friendly guy, I'm like my father. All my grandchildren who are named after my father, and I have three of them, each one is outgoing like my father, so gregarious. So as I enter Shai Yafo, I pick up this tourist from Pittsburgh, and he's taking his grandson on a bar mitzvah trip. The kid was just bar mitzvahed, and they want to walk with me to the Kotel. Do I know the way, etc., etc.? We start to talk, and it turns out that this kid's uncle, this man's son, another son, was my student at BMT. I saved the kid, put the kid on the map, turned him around, etc., etc. And the kid is wearing a big black hat, a little kid, 13 years old, what's it, a Barcelona, whatever you call it, you got to be crazy. What's it, $200 a hat? I spend on a hat. I bought this black hat I showed you, 35 shekel. I'm the happiest guy alive. I come to the Kotel, Bobby says, oh, the rabbi has a black hat, Baruch Hashem. Ashreinu Shezachinu. It's Danny's relative. Don't blame me, Ben Danny. Bobby Ash is a shulman. Danny is a shulman. They're related. Believe me, they're related. So this kid and the kid, we start talking what we do, and the kid, where do you study? And then the kid hears I'm a YU graduate. A 13-year-old kid who can't read a word of Gemara properly. Had the kid been told I'm a graduate of the Buddhist seminary for unwed mothers, he would have been prouder of me. When I, the kid, Torah, Umada, wow, he told his grandfather, you could see he walked on the other side, Chasla Khalili should touch me. If you know what's going on in Israel today, they called those idiots, called that girl a tomato. I don't even want to repeat the words. I hope they put that guy away for 2 years. That's all I can tell you. Talking about what happened on the bus, it's just beyond words what we live through and what we have to defend and try to explain. But anyway, I think had they not been at TI, there would have never been a graduate school. There would have never been a Stern College. There would have never been a medical school. You would have had a yeshiva with a high school and with a college. And I don't think there would be the same enmity, because for 50, 60 years, every kid who went to Torah Vadas and every kid who went to Chaim Berlin and every kid who went to Mir went to college. The difference is in YU, it's under one roof. It spares your time. And any kid who went to YU, at least in my time, I don't know what goes on today, but you knew yeshiva was yeshiva and college was college. And you didn't mix up the two. You didn't turn the college into Asher Kiddushanu B'mitzvah Tavit Sivanu Alimud Biologia. But you didn't make a bracha before you went into a class. Asher Kiddushani B'mitzvah Tavit Sivani Alimud Chveis Kimia, chemistry. You know, this was Torah, this was general. Ah, but yeshiva takes in TR. Well, if you take in TR, you have to have a graduate school. You have to have a graduate school. You have to have a Stern College. You have to think, have to have a medical school. You have to have Kadosa. You have to have all the graduate school. So it could be I'm right, could be I'm wrong. If is the biggest word in the dictionary. Imagine if Rabbi Rebbe was there and he said, this is a yeshiva, it's not a teacher seminary. Let Rabbi Berlin worry about Teachers Institute. We don't have to take it under our aegis, under our auspices. But while the cat's away, the mice play. And everyone took it in, and with all the implications. And it's a fascinating story. But now let me begin. And this is today's lecture. We begin, at least. Let me come back to a machlekes, a pumas I've had with Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein over the decades. I've spoken about it many, many times, and I speak about it again because it's the introduction. Who am I to differ with Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein? But on this topic, I can differ. When did the Rav reach his apex in explaining what Torah is all about? According to Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, and both of us narrow it down to two talks the Rav gave a few months apart. According to Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, when he eulogized Mori Rebbe, Moreinu V'Rabbeinu, he spoke about the Hespit for the Brisker Rav. Now, there's no question the Hespit for the Brisker Rav. I remember I was there. I remember when we came out of the Hespit, Rabbi Yeruchim Gerelik was dancing with joy. Rabbi Yeruchim. I remember his words, translated. What does it mean? I don't know. What he grabbed, what he hit, what you understand? He got to the innermost point. Yes, it's an unbelievable hesped. If you want to understand bris, there's no way in the world you can understand bris. There's no way in the world you can understand what Rav Meshulam David said a few weeks ago. Midafkein sirik tzu Rusland, tzu America. That if they're going to draft yeshiva boys, we're all going to leave Israel and go to Russia and go to America. All right? And everyone is shaking and shivering. A member of the Soloveitchik family got hold of me yesterday over the phone. And Adam Gadol at Tzadik Yisod Olam was screaming at me what happened to his family. What a bunch of idiots. And I have to calm him down and try to explain to him Reb Meshulam David. But if you want to understand Reb Meshulam David and Brisk and all that goes with it, you have to know the Rav's Hesped on the Brisker Rav. But that's not the apex of Judaism. Shmuel, you can be a very fine individual not knowing one word about the Brisker family. Okay? I guarantee you that the average fella in Panovich today or in the Podat Yosef knows very little about the Brisker family and understanding the Brisker. All right, he can sell over a shtickle Torah from Reb Chaim. Fine. The Rav gave a hesped for Reb Chaim Heller. Reb Chaim Heller, I spoke about very briefly yesterday in class. That hesped is the heart of Judaism. And it's interesting. The Rav titled the hesped Shmuel HaKatan Shel Dovreinu. And everyone who heard the hesped, we, the people, changed the title of that hesped. Because the Rav, yes, he spoke about Shmuel HaKatan, and Aaron Rakefit can redo that hesped, and it's titillating. It's just captures you, titillating. It captures you. It's Torah. It's the heart of Torah. But the world retitled it Pleitat Sof Rehem. Why? Because the apex of the hesped is where the Rav goes into davening. Everyone davened this morning. Everyone said, Allah tzaddikim v'al hasidim v'al zikneim chabit Yisrael v'al pleitat sofreihem. The remnant. And the Rav asked a simple question. Why suddenly with the fourth noun you throw in an adjective, pleitat? If you're going to use pleita, I'll pleita ta tzadikim, I'll sheirita chassidim, taka the chassidim sel, sheiritam chabet yisrael, zikneam chabet yisrael. And we only say, v'al pleita sofreihim, either you use adjectives or you don't use adjectives, but syntax has to be balanced. Anyone who writes learns what syntax is about, and here the syntax is totally unbalanced and stares you in the eyes. And the Rebbe explains so magnificently, what is Torah about? Torah, where are we different? Well, where's our religion? Where are we different than any other religion? Where is a Torah Jew different than a Reformed Jew, than a humanistic Jew, than a liberal Jew, than a Shira Chadasha Jew? Where are we different? Where are we different? Very simple. Torah is a living tradition. There's a Torah Shebaal Peh. God gave the Torah Shebaal Peh purposely. It wasn't all put down to writing. The reason there's a Torah Shebaal Peh, no one can master the Torah with all the odd scrolls in the world and all the Schopensteins in the world and all the Sansinos in the world. You need a living connection. You need a Rebbe. You need a Pleita of yesterday. The Rav said so beautifully, in every generation, youngsters want to be tzaddikim and chassidim and skenim. If you read that interview with Rakefet in the book I showed you yesterday, the Shakers and the Makers, whatever the title of the book is. So if you read the interview with me, I begin by saying from the age of 12, I had three dreams: to be a gong, a tzaddik, and a melamed. I never became a gong. I never became a tzaddik. But I did become a melamed, Baruch Hashem. So in every generation, al tzaddikim v'al chassidim, young kids like you, kids like that Ilan Kramer that I lassoed and tied up and brought into class yesterday, okay? Daniel will say testimony. I put a gun in his back and I told him he must come to one class. All right, Baruch Hashem. In every generation, there are kids like that. There was a little kid in Boston, Irwin Rubin. You kids know who Irwin Rubin is? He wanted to be a tzaddik. He wanted to be a gon. A little kid in the Bronx, Ani Rothkopf. You put your own names in. You can't achieve it on your own. Sine qua non requirement, you have to come into contact with the remnant of yesterday. And this is the gauntlet. The Rav said, had Hitler succeeded in killing all the Rosh Yeshiva, all the Rabbanim, all the Talmidei Chachamim, Judaism could not continue. We're only here because, thank God, there was a remnant that survived. In my case, it was the Shanghai crowd. Those of you that have Chassidim, you have a lot to be thankful for. The Lubavitcher Rebbe came to America. Those of you that are Chassidim, Bell survived with miracles. Ger survived with miracles. And Baruch Hashem, Bavav survived with miracles. And that's the Pleitat Sofreihem. It's a beautiful drasha, but that's all I want to speak about now. Why? Because look what Rabbi Revel had achieved. You now have a yeshiva, hundreds of students. No one is striking. No one is unhappy. There's a high school. You can stay in the yeshiva as long as you want. You can get smicha from the yeshiva. After high school, a year or two later, whenever you want, you can be accepted. If you don't have money, you go to the finest college in the city of New York, CCNY. If you don't have money, if you have money, you go to Columbia University. Jewish boys are all over the place. Yeshiva is thriving. But all the cynics are saying, it's not Europe. It's American kids. They're not great. How much can they learn? Who are their teachers? Where are their Rosh Yeshiva? Where are the Gedolei Yisrael? And Rabbi Revel, and may I say my cousin Rabbi Revel, because I'm very proud, made a decision. We must bring over one of the Gedolei Yisrael to teach in the yeshiva. We can't be second rate. We have to be as good as any yeshiva in the world. And at that time there was Mir. There was Slabatka. There was Telz. Those were probably the three biggest, most important East European yeshiva. If you're a Litvak, these were the centers. There was Panovich. There was Grodno. Rav Shimon Shkop, Sharei Torah. America has to be no different. And although Rabbi Revel was away most of these crucial years from Tulsa, Oklahoma, he pressured New York. He wrote letters to Europe. And he succeeded. And September 1st, 1922, is the most important date in the history of Torah in America. Because on that date, a ship arrived. A Jew got off the ship. A Jew who knew Kol HaTorah Kula. A Jew who did not come to America to visit, did not come to America to raise money for European yeshiva. A Jew who did not come to America to give drashat and make a little money and go back. A Jew who came to America for one purpose only, to become the Rosh Yeshiva, the highest shir in Yeshivat Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan. And his name was Rav Shlomo Palachek, the Meitshiter Ely. And I deem it a great privilege in my own life that I knew and know most of his descendants, family, yet knew his children, some of his children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, among my own students. They have little Shlemelers. They married into the family. Great-great-great-grandchildren. Rudolf Shlomo Palachek's coming. Why you will never be orphaned. And it sets the gold standard for American Torah. Because Rav Shlomo Palachek came, Rav Shimon Shkop is there. Rav Shimon Shkop, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik. Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, Mori Urebi, Rav Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik. Today, YU has produced American kids. Third, fourth generation Americans, fifth generation Americans. Gedolei Yisrael. Don't have to tell you that. You saw what went on here last week. Rabbi Yonason Sachs is sitting in the Beit Medrash canvassing for Landa, and 1 minute away walking, or a half minute away walking, or 15 seconds away in the Abraham program, there are Rabbi Schachter, Tversky, and Rosenzweig canvassing for Yeshiva College. No? Tell me. Have I just mentioned four names, four giants of Torah? Am I daydreaming? Or am I telling it as it is? What do you say? What do you say? Am I telling it as it is? But not only YU is affected. Torah Vedas, if YU can bring in such great Rashi Yeshiva, Reb David Leibovich, father of Reb Chenech Leibovich, Reb Shlomo Hyman, this is all before World War II. Chaim Berlin picks up a young, clean-shaven Rebbe from RJJ. The name? Rabbi Yitzchak Kutner. Go right down the line. Baltimore picks up, I think he was a handball king on the handball court. I don't know, I heard so many different stories about Rav Ruderman, Rav Yaakov Yisrael Ruderman. Believe he's a college graduate. You correct me if I'm wrong. Rosh Yeshiva Nei Yisrael. This is all before World War II. Don't let anyone tell you. I see greenhorns tell me, Miriam Gabbait America. We built America. We came after World War II and we built America. You're a dummy. You built on beautiful soil that was giving forth magnificent fruit even before the post-World War II period. And don't forget it, please. Give credit. Now, what's fascinating about the Maitreya. We'll talk about him now. Some of you know that I did postdoctoral research. I wrote a monograph on the Maitreya. It's published in Rakafet Aharon, I think, Chelek Aleph. It's republished, I should say, but I have a lot of work to do. I should collect what I've published since Rakafet Aharon put out, but I'm busy preparing Shurim now. I'm so enthralled with what I'm just starting work right now on the forging of an American rabbinate. I just finished the Agudas HaRabbanim, and now I'm starting work on the world which I was part of. How did it come to be? And I just spoke with Rabbi Herbert S. Goldstein's great-grandson, who was my student right here in the Kollel. Raised a certain problem that the family cannot solve for me yet, and everyone agrees it's a good question. But we'll get there. A year or two, three, Ribbono Shel Olam, give health and strength. I have to teach the young people of tomorrow. Ribbono Shel Olam, ala tzaddikim, ala chassidim, ala zekenim chaviyot, v'yal pleitat sofreihem. The difference between me and some other relative is I'm not in rebellion. I love the world that nurtured me. And I may be different, I may think differently, act differently, live differently. I love the world that nurtured me. Essentially, remember the way I eulogized a certain person a week ago? The shame etzem has not changed. The shame toa, I'm proud to be a religious Zionist. But holy be, I can't get over the description of Rakefet in the Tiv HaDamama. You won't believe what you see there. And that they caught the guy. They caught Rakefet by his beard. Believe me. What's interesting about the Maitreya coming to America, no one would want to come to America. This is to raise money. It's one thing to raise money, what you guys won't do in your lives to raise money. I hope I don't read about you being arrested. And don't say, Rebbe, you're choshed b'ksherim. Percentage-wise, I'm choshed exactly where I have to be choshed. And there are other, God have mercy, the other sins, you don't know who was arrested Thursday, a bosom buddy of mine. Gentlemen, there's no end to what you'll do for money, unfortunately. Adam nidom bekiso bekoso bekaso. Okay, come to America, fine, you stay 6 months, back to Europe. Who's going to come to America? But the Maitreya had one problem. Nishfakenim gedacht, and I'm not translating that. It doesn't lend itself to translation. Forgive me. Nishfakenim gedacht. He was a Zionist. And in the world of Reb Chaim, the world of the Litvish Yeshiva, a Zionist, they couldn't cope. They couldn't deal with it. They couldn't handle it. So when the chance came to come to America, he jumped at it. A few details of his life. I'll give you some interesting sources. It's fascinating. The Maitreya was born in 1877 in a small little hamlet, Maitreya, near Grodno. The kid, and you know, you have kids a year and a half, they're reading Hebrew letters. 2 years, they're reading a Siddur. You have kids like that. Maitreya was a genius. Genius of geniuses. You know, you got to pray that the genius remains normal. Those of you that will have genius children, and I've lived with geniuses all my life, you got to pray they remain normal. That's very important. If a kid is a genius, see to it that he plays ball occasionally, that he watches television occasionally. You know, again, with television today, it's DVDs. You can show what's of good, of interest, inspiring. Kid has to be normal. Very, very important. But a genius is a genius. This kid already, by the age of 11, 12, knew Kol HaTorah Kula. And he retained it. See, it's one thing to learn. If I would If I would retain what I have learned, I'd be the Gadol Hadar. Take my word for it. I know what I'm saying. Those of you who know me know I learn around the clock. All right, Baruch Hashem. But I don't retain it. The Narishkeit I retain. But all right, I'll tell you a vot from the Rav. I'll give Danny a gift for coming today. I'll tell you a vot from the Rav Moshe. That you forget the Torah, but it's like a mikveh. When you come out of the mikveh, you dry yourself, but the purity remains. When you study Torah, even if you forget, but the process of study, what it did for your soul, your body, your neshama, that remains. It's like a mikveh. Fabulous part. The Mechita knew everything, so there was a kid, a little older, in that area, Rabbaran Rabinovitz, who later becomes the Rav of Lida, great Rav. He convinces the Mechita's father, take the kid to the Lashon. No sense in his remaining in Mechit. He has to be exposed to the biggest minds of the generation. So according to the memoir literature, and I'll give you the source in a few minutes, the father wheels the kid. I don't know what that means. They say in an agala, could be get up in a bus, could be the kid can walk so much, could be from a bus. What am I saying? A bus from the train or the coach or the wagon to the Lashon. They had a walk. He wheels the kid in to the Lashon. Well, the older students are hysterical. The Nitziv, Reb Heschel Leib, says to the kid's father, and where's the crib? Did you bring a crib with you? A little kid. Reb Chaim sensed who this kid was, and he took the kid under his wings. Kid's bar mitzvah, Reb Chaim gives him a list of makorot. I want you to prepare a pilpul on these sauces. Schleimler looks at it. All right. The Rebbe haste. The Rebbe commands. You got to listen. Comes to bar mitzvah in the Lashon. And the kid gives an unbelievable Devat Torah on what Reb Chaim gave. Reb Chaim says to the kid, what I wanted to say on this, you didn't say. But what you said is better than what I had to say. And with that, Reb Chaim and the little Schleimler break into tears. And Reb Chaim tells the kid, I also cried at my bar mitzvah. These were two gaonim that understood each other. Mechit still remains the most beloved Talmud of Reb Chaim. And I'll quote to you from the memoir literature. It's unbelievable what we have here. This is Eidenu, which was published by the students of the very yeshiva that you're sitting in, Talmidei Yeshivat Rabbein Yitzchok Chanan, in memory of Hagon Reb Shlomo Palachik, 1929, the year after he died. And in the Eidenu, on page 80, the greatest gong ever to set foot in the United States and live there for many years. We've spoken about him. We will speak about him. Rabbi Yehuda Leib Feuer. Excuse me. Rabbi Yehuda Leib Feuer, the Rav of Holyoke, Massachusetts. The Mechita's Chavruta. He describes how he first met the Mechita. What happened? And here you have to understand. I'm sure this has been told to you. I'm sure you understand this. Reb Chaim did not have a yeshiva. There was no yeshiva in the Brisk tradition. Reb Chaim was shtat rav, sat in Reb Chaim's shtibel, and learned all day. the top minds from all over Europe came to Bris to study with Reb Chaim. They had to make their own arrangements, etc. People slept on the floor, people slept on the benches. It was not a dormitory like you have, Baruch Hashem, in Yeshiva Reb Chochanan. So the greatest minds went to Reb Chaim. This was after the Lashon closed. So Rabbi Yehuda Leib Feuer, who was like the Mechita, he comes in to Reb Chaim Shtibel and he says, I see this tall student sleeping or in a sleeping position on a hard bench, sitting up occasionally, smoking without a stop. They didn't know that smoking was dangerous. Today it's a nisa d'oraita to smoke, obviously. And he's constantly learning. And then occasionally he would tell stories about his youth growing up in a dorf, in a village, a little village like Meitzhit. And he would talk about the farmers and the Jews and the Gentiles. And he was just a fascinating individual. Then Rabbi Yehuda Leib Feuer would describe how Reb Chaim would start to think aloud, and Reb Chaim would ask a shaila, and he would look around, and what can we answer? Nu, wie kann man verstehen? How do we explain this Rambam? And Reb Chaim, no one would open their mouths, and Reb Chaim said, Nu, Shleimela, was sagt man? What do you have to say? And Shleimela, who looked half asleep, would open his eyes and give a fabulous teretz. Reb Chaim would then say, Nu, kann man das abschlagen? Can you, how do you say that in English? Can you refute the answer you just gave? And the Mechit that would refute it. And then Reb Chaim would say, so what do you find? How do you explain it? And the Mechit that would give a fabulous answer. And Reb Chaim would say, problem solved. The Mechit that solved it for us. Then he had problems with the draft, got a draft exemption. And he went to the kibbutz of Reb Chaim Oyser in Vilna. Now this is very, very important. Why? My dear students, you have the attitude, you have the feeling. You know, Europe was wonderful, Europe was good, everything was holy, everything was fine. Did you ever hear Moriah Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik speak about Europe? Until 1900, people would not be Mechal Shabbos Bepahasiya. By 1900, it became almost the norm. In every city, you had Chilul Shabbos, in every city, you had Maskilim, in every city, you had Apikorsim, in every city, you had enmity and hatred for the rabbinate. You know, those of you who study psychology, those of you who know Freud, you're going to find in life, those of you that are going into counseling, those of you going into the rabbinate, you have no idea how children can have enmity towards parents. I've heard children, and I gave lectures on this. Remember, I gave lectures on Kibbutz Aviyim years ago, and I had to say to a kollel, and people thanked me for saying it from all over the world, no normal parent harms a child. You know, we make mistakes. That's why, tell me, who's a bechor here? Who's a bechor? No, how come you get pishnayim? I'm a bechor. How come I get double? You know what Rav here says? You get double because your parents make the mistakes on you. You're the Bechor. And that's absolutely... But no parent willingly makes a mistake. And yet kids hate their parents. I hate psychologists when they tell off your parents. Yell at your parents. I would tell again, look, yes, maybe your parent made a mistake. But they meant for your good. They're only human beings. They only have their own characteristics. But same thing with Rebbeim. When the revolution began, the secular Zionists, the communists, the socialists, the Bundists, the enmity towards the Rabbanim was unbelievable. Now Vilna, which we idolize, I mean, I still remember my Zeder of David Fogel session, say Reb, because in America he learned in Volozhin, but in America a lot left. So David Fogel said to me, my Neinakul, he says to me, and yeah, I'll say it in English, he says, my grandson, be proud. Your grandfather comes from Vilna. Your grandmother from Kovna. And wow, Vilna. So you have to know, in Vilna by 1900, there were alien winds blowing. It was an open society. Many a yeshiva boy wound up in Vilna, wound up in Kovna, and threw it all away. Some with enmity and some without enmity. Threw it all away. Gone. Finished. I know over the years I've been into, thank God, where I sit in life behind the desk, but contact with tens of thousands. I've met great-grandchildren of Gedolei Yisrael, Balei Tshuva. Two, three generations. Nothing but nothing. Enmity. And these kids, wow. So, Reb Shlomo Palachek now goes to Reb Chaim Moise's kibbutz, it was called, in Vilna. Now, here it was a little bit more organized. Reb Chaim Moise was the Av Beit Din of Vilna. Again, I can't go into endless details. I did postdoctoral. Let me stop talking about what I did, but what can I tell you? I have no other source. I did, a friend of mine named Aaron Rakefet did work on Reb Chaim Moise, why Vilna had no chief rabbi. Rakefet originally published it in Hebrew. It appears in Rakefet Aaron, I think, maybe Chelik Bet. It received good reviews. You see, in Vilna, they had no chief rabbi. They had no chief rabbi because, leave it to Jews, there was tremendous machleket in the time of the Vilna Gaon. Not that the Vilna Gaon was involved, but Rav Shmuel was the chief rabbi. Who should succeed Rav Shmuel? They were killing each other. When Jews fight, you all know, the state of Israel is shaking at this very moment in time because a God of Israel called this one a goy. Okay, I don't have to elaborate further. No, if you're a guy and he calls you a guy, so we fight back. Rakefet doesn't fight back. Allah, he laughs. But not everyone's like Rakefet. No, you know what's going on now. So, there's no chief rabbi. But the most important position was Av Beit Din. Now, after World War I, there was a chief rabbi. The Mizrahi took over. That was Reb Yitzchak Rubinstein. And that's why I do my research, the interbellum period, and what happened. But that's not for now. What's important is that Reb Chaim Moise already, sitting in Vilna, Vilna the apex, the center, had access to money. He raised funds. He had it was called the kibbutz. You would call it a kollel. But it was like kibbutz, meaning they sat with Reb Chaim Moise, they sat and learned, and I don't know, two or three times a week, Reb Chaim Moise would come in and speak and learning with them. Reb Chaim Moise was one of the last great poskim to be turned out by Litvashi Yeshiva. Reb Chaim Moise studied in Volozhin a little bit before Reb Chaim became the dominant figure. Reb Chaim Moise refers in his writings to a Talmud, that is a Talmud Chaver of Reb Chaim Brisker. Underline the word Chaver. Talmud Chaver. I have to tell you, the Soloveitchik family is a little bit upset with that. They claim he was a Talmud, but he claims he's a Talmud Chaver. He was a Posek Mufak. I told you, Reb Aaron Soloveitchik told me what was the uniqueness of Reb Chaim Moise. When he got a difficult child, and you see it in the Achiezer, he knew just where to go. In other words, when we're today, you're a big shot. I have the Bar Ilan CD on response literature. Big deal. So you have 150,000 different responses on the CD. Where do you go to get the answer? What are you, Rabbi Avadya Yosef, that you know every last tshuva and you'll count heads? But Rabbi Chaim Moise knew, Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik knew exactly where to go. So this was the kibbutz. But while he was at the kibbutz, he was in Vilna. Vilna was a hotbed of enlightenment, a hotbed of Zionism. He had a mind that couldn't stop. I told you, Reb Chaim Zimmerman in Europe knew mathematics, biology, chemistry. He knew the Encyclopedia Britannica by heart. Reb Berach Berlevovich, his uncle, kicked him out of Europe, saved his life, kicked him to America, told him, you'll destroy all the yeshivas here. You know so much general knowledge, the yeshiva boys will look at you, you'll be their role model, and it'll be the end of Kamenetz, of Rotten, of Slabatka, of Mir. He kicked them out of Europe, go to America. And that's how Rabbi Chaim Zinman's life was saved. He winds up in America in Yeshivas from Solchana and sitting and learning. His chavruta then was Rabbi Dov Sherman, whose daughter is married to my kid brother. But this is, he couldn't stop his mind. And he remained the Meitshe to Eloi, but the Meitshe to Eloi who had so broadened. At this point, Mizrahi is coming onto the map. Mizrahi is coming onto the map, and the founder of the Mizrahi, the president of the Mizrahi, Rabbi Yaakov Reines, he's known as Rabbi Jacob Reines. Rabbi Reines organizes a gymnasium, a yeshiva high school in Lida, and I told you it was called Torah. I can't say it in modern Hebrew because all my life I've chizak teda vadas. It was called Yeshiva Torah Vadat. And there already a broad yeshiva. Torah on a high level, general subjects. Religious Zionism. What we would call in Israel a yeshiva tichonit. But many of the students were much older and were tremendous lamdanim with the years in Slabodka, in Brisk, in Telz, wanted to gain more knowledge and have a general education and a profession. Or many of them became rabbanim where the state required a gymnasium degree. The Meitshiter is invited to become the Rosh Yeshiva. And there's the famous story that we'll never know what actually happened. The Meitshiter goes to Reb Chaim to ask for a letter, a hamlatzah, perhaps smicha. And the anecdote has it that Reb Chaim said, I'll only give you the letter if you will not go to a Mizrahi institution, which is uprooting Torah and tradition. And again, there are two variations. One that the Meitshiter turned away and said, I don't need the letter, and walked away crying, and Reb Chaim turned away. The other one is that the Meitshiter said, I'm going, whether the Rebbe likes it or not, and Reb Chaim, with tears, gave him a letter of recommendation. Take it either way, but the message is clear. The Meitshiter was very happy. He had found his place. Mizrahi, general subjects. World War I breaks out. We Jews have no mazel. Vatishko ta'aretz abayim shana. 40 years of peace for the Jewish people is a major achievement. How old is the state of Israel, Kanayin Hara? Draw your own conclusion. What are we heading for? 64 years? What are we heading for? There's Rat Hashem, 48, 13, 65 years, Kanayin Hara. Am I right or wrong? They're professors here, mathematicians, help the Rebbe. Gentlemen, Vatishko ta'aretz abayim shana. What an achievement. We don't have it. World War I breaks out, the end of Torah Vadas. They run from the battlefield. The Meitshiter is caught up in Russia. The communists take over. Finally, he gets out of Russia. And once again, in Bialystok. And by the world, so many people make the mistake. I've seen intelligent people write that Rav Moshe Soloveitchik succeeded the Meitshiter twice, once in Tachkamoni and once at Reitz. Wrong. Tachkamoni had branches. Rav Moshe winds up in Warsaw. The Eloi winds up in Bialystok. It was branches. But Tachkamoni, to turn out, high school, a rabbinic program, a teaching program. It's like today in Israel, the clash between the what we call the traditional yeshiva and yeshiva Hezda, the Kolelim, the Bar Ilan Kolel, Ariel has every university, Bezalel. My grandson goes to Bezalel. They have the Frum kids have a learning program. It's amazing what's going on, Kanai and Hara. What a world. We have to be so thankful to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You can be Frum, you can be a Gon, you can be a Rebbe, you can be a Malamed, you can be a Dayan, you can be a doctor, you can be a lawyer, you can be an artist, you can be a musician. It is. You can be a movie maker. What's available today to the young people? Wow. The Meshit is in Bialystok. And then Rabbi Revel, the yeshiva, turns to him and invites him to America. And the Meshit accepts. Comes to America, gets off the boat, comes to the yeshiva, and the world changes. And here you have to understand, every person has a soul. We're taught to be evil. The nature of a person is good. Don't want to say I disagree with the Torah, ki yetzer lev adam ra min urav, but I'd rather interpret it that you have a yetzer in you. It's there. But in a proper environment, you crave sanctity. B'dilei nafach, as the Zohar says, the soul is from God. It's not from us, it's from God. His own breath is put into us. So you see, American kids, they saw the Meshitta, they were enthralled, they were captivated. A gadol shebegadolim. And the Meshitta, see, he was, for them, they couldn't believe it. The man would read the Britannica. We have eyewitness, I'll give you sources. He knew mathematics, he knew, one time he came to the yeshiva. I don't have to tell you, Rakefit is a kid every morning, looks at the New York Yankee website, what's going on in spring training. So he wanted to know, what are they all excited about? So they gave him a box score of yesterday's game. The Meshitta, I know this from my witnesses, the Meshitta looks at the box score, gives it back, and he says, all right, new fragment, ask me. And he gives them back the whole box score, name, at-bats, hits. I don't know if he knew what he was saying, but within 2 minutes, he had memorized the entire box score. And I don't have to tell you if you're familiar. I have a good friend who gave a hesped for Joe DiMaggio. Unfortunately for that friend of mine, no one knows all the shirim of Torah, everything he's taught. No one knows he knows anything. It's unbelievable. I feel bad for him because he's always introduced as a great speaker, as a wonderful at the hesped for DiMaggio, and no one knows that he's given shirim for he hasn't repeated a shirim in Shas and Paiskim since 78. All dalet chalpenesh kai mazel. But if you know the way he began that shiur and ended the shiur, and then he published in Washington. That's the truth. I heard it from people who were there. I yet knew Talmudim, Rabbi Drazen, from Baltimore. It's a Talmud of the Meshitta. Rabbi Simcha Levi, Baltimore, a Talmud of the Meshitta. They were brothers-in-law. Rabbi Nathan Drazen, Rabbi Zev Drazen, William was Echad of Talmud. So the Meshitta comes to the yeshiva. You know, a New York winter is pretty bad. You know, they had a one storm, another storm, a third storm. You got to be crazy to live there, but okay. Maybe it has other advantages. Could be. I don't know what, but could be. Okay. Then the spring comes in, like a day like today. Ah. So the Kinderlach from the yeshiva on East Broadway The kids all arrived, 8:15, yeshiva begins at 9, and they're playing stickball in front of the yeshiva, or punch ball. And tens and tens of kids are jumping and clapping and playing. And the major, who was accompanied by some fellows who lived with him in Williamsburg, the major looks at the kids playing and never forget his words. Why didn't we play in our youth? We could have been the same Talmidei Chachamim and we would have had Megachot a Jugend. We would have had a youth. And boy, that was an ingenious comment. That was the Mechita. He fit into Reitz like a glove on a hand. And I want to quote to you. Talk about American kids. Well, what characterizes the yeshiva? What characterizes an American kid? The Wall Street Journal just had an article, not on Rakefet, and not on the teaching of Torah, and not on the Mechita. It had an article on the Kiddushim in the United States. And I know from my own nephews, they can hop all over the eastern seaboard. The Kiddush, the whiskey. You saw the article? You saw the brands mentioned? Halavai, I should know Shasim Paiskim. Like they know all these different brands and the differences. An American kid, you put food in front of him? What are you talking about? What he eats at a kiddush? You say to an American yeshiva bacha, what are you eating so much at the kiddush? You're going to be eating a big lunch in a half hour. Don't worry, Rebbe. I can handle both. You want to see who the Mechita was? This is a quote from a newspaper describing an alumni luncheon that Revel hosted on November 29th, 1923. I'm quoting word by word from an eyewitness. It seems that the old traditional saying, if there is no Torah, there is no food, im ein kemach ein Torah, is strictly adhered to when Talmid Chachamim get together. While the table had been set for a luncheon, somehow or other, the center of gravitation seemed to be Rabbi Palachik, who sat at a distance from the covered table. Little by little, the chairs were drawn away from the luncheon table and the group gathered around Rabbi Palachik, who gave a discourse on Chalitza. It was one of the most inspiring scenes I've ever witnessed in my life. There sat Rabbi Palachik pouring forth words of wisdom, and the younger men moved together in a close circle about him, listening with keen interest and rapt attention to every word uttered by the patriarch. The scene was apparently marred only by the presence of a covered table set for the repast. For observing this group of scholars so concentrated on what the rabbi was saying, so that not an iota should escape their ears, one was certain that they were as far away from the luncheon as the North Pole is from the South. Not until the rabbi ceased to speak were there any comments or questions. It was an inspiring scene indeed. And I want to ask you, imagine if Moriya Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik, would be sitting here. Would we be interested in food? Would we be interested in the Yankees? Wouldn't we all be gathered around him, taking advantage of every second to gain knowledge from Reb Chaim's grandson, Reb Chaim Voloshin's direct descendant, a man whose life bridged continents, worlds? This is Torah. How did I begin the lecture 1 hour ago? Give me the key words. Pleitat Sofrehim. This is the rubric. This is what it's all about. This is where we're different. This is why we're not conservative, we're not reformed. People ask me about Shira Hadash. I said years ago, it's conservative. People laughed at me, mocked me. Thank God today Rabbi Lichtenstein has come out. Others, Reb Kefet is not alone. But this is what it's all about. This is Pleitat Sofrehim. Again, many different viewpoints, hashkafas. Could be sitting around the Mechita with some Hasidic or Jungalite. Beautiful. Wonderful. Your soul seeks holiness. This is the Mechita. Let me go a step further. In the Eidenu, we have more memoir literature. There was a Dr. Natan Klutz. It's a funny last name. If you know Yiddish, if you have a name Klutz, you'll change it. It's like I know people with the name Shmukla. And they're from, they have a big jelly factory in the United States. They make jam. I don't know, they may have already merged. Polana, part of the Polana family, 100% Shemesh Chabbos. These are real from people, but they're entrepreneurs in the food industry. But klutz, how would you explain a klutz? How do you say that in English? I don't even know. A klutz. A klutz is a klutz. I don't know. I don't know if it has a word in English. Does it have a word? We have to check. Webster's unabridged. I'm sure it's been used already by the New York Times. So anyway, Dr. Natan Klutz was a maskil, a frum maskil, who taught at Teachers Institute. He was part of the faculty with Zeitlin, with Yechiel Kaplan, what we spoke about last week. So he describes, beginning on page 84, he comes to the United States after studying in Israel, and he comes, mamish, a day or two before Yom Kippur, and he's staying with his family in Williamsburg. Now remember, Williamsburg then was a big center. It wasn't like today, Satmar. It was Williamsburg, an American Williamsburg. But a lot of Frum Jews already lived there. Brooklyn always had a nucleus of Frum Jews. Unlike the Bronx, and unlike most of Manhattan, the East Side never had. The West Side, times did, times didn't. The Lower East Side, of course, is where everyone began. So he describes the next morning, Erev Yom Kippur, he sees this man, big eyes, 1927, it's Klutz's second day in America, and he wears a long bekisha, and you see his long beard, and his mind is always at work. You could see it's always thinking. And he walks up and down, and there are pushkas there for tztaka, and he describes the pushka that he gave the most to was the pushka of the Keren Kayemet LeYisrael, the Keren Kayemet. And he asks, who is this person? And they tell him, it's Shlomo Palachek, the Mechit Tehili, who had heard of in Europe, in Israel, and he's the Rosh Yeshiva, Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan. And he says, it was my greatest privilege to get to know him when we were on the faculty together. And he said, I never met anyone like him. He describes, he read all the newspapers. He knew what was going on in the world. He read German. He read English. Then he would discuss with him in learning. And the Mechita says to him, in my opinion, this is on page 86, very fascinating. In my opinion, the most important sefer that was written is the Rambam, the Mishneh Torah. It's more important, the Mechita says, than hundreds of years before from that, hundreds of years afterwards. So Klutz innocently asked the Mechita, how can you say a thing like that? The Rambam, after all, is a Rishon. They're Gaonim. They're earlier Rishonim. How can you give him so much credit? So the Mechita says to him, if that's your problem, it's not a question. And the Mechita explains to him, look at the world. You have natural boundaries and you have artificial boundaries. When you go to the edge of Brooklyn and go to Coney Island and go to Brighton Beach, you have a natural boundary. There is the ocean. But when you travel in the United States and you say, this is Connecticut and this is Vermont and this is Massachusetts, what makes Massachusetts Massachusetts, and what makes England England, and what makes France France, and what makes Germany Germany, or makes Alsace-Lorraine caught in the middle, these are divisions that human beings contrive of. The same thing with the Rambam. We call them Goinim, we call them Rishonim. Those are not natural boundaries. Those are boundaries that historians gave them so we can refer to them within context, we can refer to them within ease. But I have offered the Rambam, no Sefer was written on that level like the Mishneh Torah. And I have to tell you, that's a very deep, profound vart. And that was the Mechita. His son-in-law writes a beautiful memoir, and it said at the end, and by the way, I knew his son-in-law. His children were very, very active in Bnei Akiva. His son-in-law's name was, if I'm not mistaken, was Goldberg. I think the first name was Reb Yehuda Leib. Moshe Goldberg. And on page, at the end of the son-in-law's memoir, the saddest part of all, that here the Maitreya was so happy after wandering, after going through from Maitreya to Volozhin, to Brisk, to Vilna, to Lida, to Bialystok, he finally found himself in New York, where he could have an Encyclopedia Britannica in his house, where he could read newspapers, where he could be active in organizations there, go to Sarabanim, the Mizrahi, and everyone knew who he was, and he was at home, and the yeshiva, and the teaching. And my dear students, all of that came to an end when someone will ask you, what was the greatest achievement of the 20th century? My mother said indoor plumbing. I've heard others say airplane travel. Others talk about the invention of a car. And any intelligent person will say the invention of antibiotics. Do you know what the Mechita died from? They cure it today with one shot of penicillin antibiotics. I had this problem in the mid-60s. One shot of penicillin, and I was cured. Osteomyelitis of the gum. There was an infection in his gum. It's right before the advent of antibiotics. The Mechita, 1928, during the summer, young man yet, born 1877, 1928, make the cheshbon. I'm quoting to you from Bernard Revel, page 117, to Rabbi Revel's great sorrow after a brief illness of 2 weeks. Rabbi Palachik died of osteomyelitis of the jaw, the result of an abscess tooth, on July 8th, 1928. His untimely death at the age of 51, cast American Orthodoxy into deep mourning. We don't have mazel. He left four children. As I said, one daughter married Rabbi Moshe Goldberg. The whole Goldberg family lives in Israel today. In Haifa for many years. Today they're spread out all over Israel. One of my students married into the family. I was Sandik at the Brit. I had to split to be the Sandik for a direct descendant of the Mechita Eloi named Shlomo. Another daughter married Rabbi Mafshowitz. Those of you from Queens should recognize the name. There's a square named in his memory right on Union Turnpike, I believe it's called. He was rabbi of a very big synagogue, which was semi-conservative, the old type conservative, I don't know what it is today, where everything was really orthodox, but of course there was no mechitza. That was very detrimental in yeshiva's history. Why? Because when the burden of running the yeshiva in the 1960s, which such proportions and tens of millions of dollars had to be raised, Rabbi Revel desperately sought an assistant to the president or vice president, call it what you wish, and his first choice was Rabbi Israel Mofschwitz. Rabbi Mofschwitz had unbelievable contacts politically and with wealthy people. He was a very, very well-placed Orthodox rabbi in a conservative synagogue. And Rabbi Revel was ready, Rabbi Belkin was ready to appoint him. But by the 1960s, the yeshiva graduates, the faculty, how can you appoint a rabbi of a conservative temple vice president of Yeshiva University? And it never could come to fruition. And it remained a difficult era for Rabbi Belkin. As you recall, Rabbi Rachman assisted him afterwards, Rabbi Miller. But the fundraising that Rabbi Mofschwitz could have accomplished, no one could have accomplished. The two sons, and everyone remained the Shomer Shabbos, one son, professor of math, and one son, a skilled medical doctor. The medical doctor came in Aliyah and lived, worked at Hadassah and Karim. I believe he was a kidney doctor, and he was Marech Yomim, living here in Ramat Eshkol, Zachal Lerot Banim, Uvenei Banim, Uvenei Venei Banim, Oskim B'Torah V'Mitzvot. One little story on my own with the Meitzer, then I'll tell you a story with Rabbi Revel. One little story on my own. Some of you know that I had quite an active career in the IDF in Sahal, Ani Modela Kodesh Baruch Hu. So I became very close to the chief rabbi, General Gad Navon. And he would call me whenever he had a question, a problem. I have some interesting tales to tell with Hashkacha, such as when he called me, you'll appreciate this, Charlie, when they were looking for a substitute for milk for coffee when everyone has eaten meat, a power of a substitute. So they come up with something in the United States, and it has the Hashkacha of Kahal Adat Yeshurin. And Rabbi Navon checks, it's not OU, it's not Chafkei, it's not okay. And he calls me, can Evshalis Mochal Ashkacha Zote and Ilamogaletze Bashum Makom? And I told him, this is the Germans, the Basin, this is Rabbi Breuer, 100%. And that went into the army. It solved a lot of problems for the Chiloniim who had to have that white in the coffee. But he calls me another time. And you know, and it was just advertised, those of you that live in Israel and meaning that you are integrated and follow the Israeli newspapers and are citizens, so the rabbinate is advertising any Talmud Chacham from any yeshiva, and this is true about the military rabbinate, you can be from Panovich, Mekas Harav, YU, they're running, every year they run a very fancy, wonderful course for military rabbis. And by the way, there's not a chaplain. In the rabbinate in Israel, you are a fighter. You carry a gun, you're not a chaplain, you're at the front line, but you have to be a Talmud Chacham. You have to know how to paskin shilas for the army that you never dreamt about in civilian life. And yeah, I can give you 1,000 examples, but imagine you don't have an Arab. You're in a battlefield. And the battle, can you carry out food to the soldiers? What do you do? Shabbos lo aleinu, you're in battle and their korbanot and their bodies. Nu, you all know the Gemara in Shabbos, the flamid. So you're going to go find the challah and put it on. You have to move the lo aleinu, the body out of the way. How do you do it? What do you do? Shabbos, all the problems that we never dreamt about. So I get a call from Rabbi Gad Navon that a YU graduate from Rehovot has asked to take the course. And he says, he's calling me, maybe I know him. I said, Maha Shem, gives me the name Shlomo Palachek. So I say to him, I don't know him, but I know where he comes from. He has to be a grandson of the Meitzit Ha'Ilui from there's a street in Yerushalayim, Rehov Ha'Ilui, right next to Merkaz HaRav. He knew the street. I said, you take him into the class. He calls me about 2 months later. He says, Ata yodei miya mispar echad, who is number one in the course? Shlomo Palachek. And he says, Yeshle, do you have any other candidates you can recognize, you can recommend like this? I said, listen, there was only one Meitzit Ha'Ilui, so I assume there was only one Shlomo Palachek. And let me end off about the Meitzit. It's sad. 51 years of age. It's a youngster. Some of you already are over 51. I'm not. I'm younger than all of you, but that's a different story. Mrs. Revel told me this story, that Rabbi Revel was very depressed. A bitter pill. Here he had worked so hard, he brought over the Meitzit, he got the Balabatan to agree, he's teaching in the yeshiva, everything has worked out so beautifully, no one laughs at Reitz, an Amerikanische yeshiva, no one will call it an American institution. And she said, one evening, Saturday night, he went out on the terrace of their apartment. He lived in the Broadmoor Hotel. He yet had money at the time. And he says to his wife, he says, Sarah, come here, let me show you something. And he shows her a beautiful star in the sky. And he says, that's the Meitzit. That star is the Meitzit. Pick a bright constellation in the heavens and name it the Meitzit Ha'Ilui. One other story about the Meitzit, which captures his life dilemma. The 1920s, once you had the Central Relief Committee, once that began, once Gedolei Yisrael on the level of Rav Kook and the Lubavitch Mordechai and the Kovner Rav, once Gedolei Yisrael, Mazel Tov on the wedding of your Chavrita. Right or wrong? Okay. Find out how he's doing. Do you talk with him yet, or it's all over? You were sat here, bosom buddies. Send my love. Okay. So the Meitzit, Gedolei Yisrael started to visit America to raise money, but every famous Rosh Yeshiva came to America in the 20s. Nope. Some of these Rosh Yeshiva knew the Meitzit intimately. He was ashamed of it. He was the Eloi of the European yeshiva world. So Blazer Yehuda Finkel visits America and he says to the Meitzit, he says, Nu Shleimala, what did you accomplish? You went to America. Had you remained in Europe, you would be the most famous Rosh Yeshiva today. Thousands would sing your praises, come to your Shayurim. Yeah, no, you're Rosh Yeshiva, an Americana Yeshiva. How many students? Why did you leave? And the Meitzit answers him. He says, Lazer, you're right. Had I remained in Europe, I would be a big Rosh Yeshiva today. Famous yeshiva, but I'd have to live in America anyway. So the Mir Rosh Yeshiva says, why? He says, because of my hashkafas. You would tolerate a Mizrachiite, a maskil, someone with general knowledge, he said. I have no choice. I'd have to live in America anyway. And that's what the Meitzit answered the Mir Rosh Yeshiva. So, 1 second, let me just organize this properly. So you see what Rabbi Revel accomplished. Wow. The right man in the right place at the right time. The Meitzit Ha'Ilui. But now we have a real problem. Some people I remember, let me tell true stories. I remember in 1977 when I went back to America, when I left America in 69, I thought I would never see the United States again. We were a poor, young, little couple with three little children, with no money, going to a land we had never lived in. And in 77, after I did basic training, I was in the army, whatever, the Israeli government sent me back to address the RCA convention and some other, a whole series of lectures in the United States. So I'm at the RCA convention, and the Rav gives a beautiful talk on Agadah. It was a talk on the Gemara in Sanhedrin, the Fafamid Bet, that Zayin Amid Aleph. And in the middle of the talk, 77, he eulogizes his wife. I have to ask apologies because some of you have suffered in life, but with a sense of humor, you'll appreciate what I'm going to say. Eulogizes the Rebbetzin 10 years after her death. We come out, and there's Rabbi Yeruchim Gerelick, and he's surrounded already by the younger rabbis. And it's all in Yiddish. You got to appreciate, Veint noch vom Freud, you know. 10 years after his death, he's still crying. Rabbi Yeruchim is giving a critique of the Rav. And then the young rabbis, some of them are idiots. What can I tell you? So some of them, you know, they got to show off. So some of them, yeah, they understand it. They're happily married. And others, I don't want to repeat what they said, but I'll give you a little idea. One of them says, if my Macha Shefa went, I would dance. I don't want to go any further. Yeah, you know, and idiots are speaking. So now, let's come back to Rabbi Palachek. When you have a happy marriage, you know, you're overwhelmed, you're shocked. You can barely go further. You need tremendous strength. When you don't have a happy marriage, you're right, that idiot may be right. They're Vetansin. I don't want to go further. I don't want to quote him entirely. What I remember from that, I'll tell you another story with that convention. In parentheses, we come out of the pool, everyone's in the pool, Pine View Hotel, and there's Rabbi Luchstein, Joe Luchstein. Immediately, 30 young rabbis are around him. This is a legendary figure. And there's Rabbi Luchstein. I'm quoting him syllable by syllable. He says, I'm the same age as Rabbi Soloveitchik. This is 77, right? So they were both 74, correct, 1903. He says, but there's a big difference between me and Rabbi Soloveitchik. He's an old 73, whatever I figured, and I'm a young 73. That's what he said. Nope. Can anyone tell me what happened 1 year later? Let me not say it. Close the parentheses. I'll never forget that convention. You know, a kid doesn't appreciate what's being said, but when you're older, if you've seen life, boy, we have some great rabbis, but at times they are very stupid. I can just see Rabbi Yeruchim. Rabbi Rebel was totally distraught. What do we do with the yeshiva? What do we do for a Rosh Yeshiva? We had a beautiful marriage here. You had the right man in the right place. The students loved him, revered him. What do we do for the yeshiva? And here was a tremendous dilemma. Once again, I can tell you, and let me end off the class. Once again, I can tell you, there were great Rosh Yeshiva from Europe visiting America. Rabbi Baruch Be'er Leibovitch was there. Rabbi Baruch Be'er, Talmid Mufak of Rabbi Chaim. I don't have to tell you the awe and reverence he had for his Rebbe, Rav Chaim. Rav Baruch Be'er recommends Rav Moshe Soloveitchik. Why? It's not just that Rav Moshe is a gon. Not just that Rav Moshe is the son of Rav Chaim. But Rav Moshe has to get out of Europe. He has no place there. Because, unfortunately, Rav Moshe, the son of Rav Chaim, has become a bit of a Mizrahiite. And I use those words very carefully. If you notice, I didn't say he became a total Mizrahiite, but a bit of a Mizrahiite. Rebbetzin Pesha was a Mizrahiite long before Reb Meisha knew the word. Cheche la femme, if you know French, if I'm pronouncing it right. If you don't know French, open up a Medrash Rabbah. Hakol acharei ha'isha. Eli, right or wrong? Who rules in the house, you or your wife? The truth, when you walk in, you stand up before her. Don't do it the opposite way. Gentlemen, Rebbetzin Pesha, long before Reb Meisha got an invitation to go to America, and Rebbetzin Pesha wanted to go, and he refused. But now it's after World War I. It's after he's gone to Warsaw. The only place that will take him is Tachkamoni. He's teaching in Tachkamoni. He has tremendous battles in Tachkamoni with Professor Balaban. Chachmat Yisrael versus traditional learning. Some of the very problems and the enigmas that we have discussed in class over the generations already. Reb Meisha would be perfect. But it's a distant dream. Why you, what we call today, or should I be more correct, Reitz, wants Reb Meisha. Reb Meisha wants to come. But the embassy in Warsaw, USA, anti-Semites, won't give Reb Meisha a visa. He had an ingrown toenail operation. Had difficulty with his foot. We don't want invalids in the United States. And Reb Berkman's suggestion is fabulous, but it's not practical at the moment. And YU remains with a great dilemma. La'an. Where do we go? Who do we get? Keep sober on Purim so you remember the question. And we will deal with it, Be'ezrat Hashem, in 2 weeks' time. So to reiterate, Al HaTzadikim V'Al HaChassidim V'Al Ziknei Amcha Beit Yisrael V'Al Pleitat Sof Rehem, the Mechita represented the first great Pleita to come to America to teach, to inspire. The students loved him. Matza min et mino, in a positive fashion, if you know you're a Yoredeya. What a revolution. What an individual. If Reitz could design the individual who should be Rosh Yeshiva, it would be the Mechit. What broadness. And happy. And acclimated to America. But we have no mazal. Ein mazal Yisrael, the Gemara in Shabbos. And all of you know, 51 years. And Reb Moshe is a wonderful idea. But it's an idea that can't come to fruition yet. It's unbelievable what they gave him over that ingrown toenail operation. And you know, he came to America a healthy man. It's not that there was any other health problem. He finally died of a heart attack very suddenly. It's attributed to his aggravation. His sister attributes it in Shulamit Meiselman in her memoir. She attributes it to the opposition to Mori Rebbe to become president of the yeshiva, what's today Yeshiva University. But he was a healthy man. Wouldn't give him a visa. Why do I say, if you heard today's shiur, you won't sin? If you understand the concept of Pleitat Sof Rehem, and you had a Rebbe in your life, read my introduction to the Rav. Read the Yerushalmi, I quote, always keep that image before you. When you have your Rebbe's image before you, you cannot sin. Isn't that what the Rav said in his introduction to Ish Halacha? Dumut yukno shel aviv nirata b'chalon. Yosef HaTzadik. And to me, that's the key to being a Jew. Gentlemen, a few tidbits. Pass this on to Yitzruben. I want to make a correction. I don't find the paper here, but I made one mistake. When I told you Trotsky's grandson's last name is Bornstein, like Trotsky, no, the last name is not Bornstein. It's, I don't see it here. I had the sheet here. Well, we'll find it, but it's not Trotsky. The last name is Axelrod. That's right. He is a son of a daughter of Trotsky. What's even more fascinating is that his mother, who lives in Jerusalem, refuses Israeli citizenship because she doesn't believe there should be a Jewish people. Could you imagine? And I was sent an article, I may have it in my office, I was sent an article where they do a comparison with Trotsky's grandson and with Menachem Begin's son, grandson, the son of Benny Begin, who wrote a book denying Zionism, Judaism, just humanism, and liberalism. So it shows you, children, parents, parents, children. Did I ever tell you the book from Yosef Elio Henkin? They once asked Rav Henkin, how can it be that kings who were tzaddikim had sons who were rishayim, and kings who were rishayim had kids who were tzaddikim? And Rav Henkin answered, "Min veishnis v'demamis given. We don't know who the mother was." It's a meridikvat. Also, I want to tell you that you were correct. There was an article in the Jerusalem Post. I didn't realize this, that part of the Cairo Geniza is in the United Reformed Church Westminster College. They have a small part of the Geniza, and they're willing to sell off that collection for money. And Oxford and what's the other university there? Cambridge are joining together, trying to raise funds to buy their small collection. What's the most valuable part of the collection is a tabiat from the Rambam. It's a first draft of his Perush on the Mishnah. So you were right. It's not only, I thought it was only in Cambridge. It seems most of it is in Cambridge, part in Oxford. And they're selling it off. It's very little, 1.2 million. What's the European currency? What's the currency? Pounds? 1.2 million pounds. So what would that be? About $2 million? I don't know what the exchange rate, but about $2 million, which we could raise right in YU and buy it. YU. Akasha from Misa. Now, I want to tell you also, the eulogy in the New York Times and read by David Hartman was the best of all the eulogies. I got to give them credit. I love, you know, how do you describe Rabbi Hartman? So everyone, liberal, orthodox, non-denominational. Rabbi Heschel Schechter told me a story that he heard from Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein, that Aaron asked Duvi, "Why don't you call yourself conservative?" And Duvi answered, "Because the conservative Jews don't cry when they say Kol Nidre." Josh, you interpret that. I'll leave that to you. I haven't figured that out yet, but it's a good answer. But the New York Times, Rabbi David Hartman, champion of an adaptive Judaism, dies at 81. Adaptive with an A. It's a fabulous description. In other words, if there are problems, so you adapt Judaism to fit the problems. And, you know, you take it, Aguna, etc. Go right down the line. Anyway, if anyone's interested, I have two copies. Here,
Greenberg is not really that way.
No, Greenberg is beyond Hartman because he already abolished the whole covenant. Now, this is about Avi Weiss. This is Rav Meir Twersky was being given this. I said, I want to make a copy. Then when I read it, I say, this is a few years ago. I know all this. This is about, I was in New York during the summer, and I heard that Avi Weiss is having a woman lead the Kabbalat Shabbos service. So this is about the fallout from that service. It's the critique of Yated Ne'aman. There's a response by my student, Rabbi Nadi Helfgott, of was he in the kollel with you, Nadi Helfgott? That's before or after you?
Before.
So this is a response, and very, very fascinating give and take. The world of Chabad, 1 second. This is an interesting story about a Chabad shaliach meeting this Brazilian president, and he doesn't shake her hand. What's more interesting are the various comments. You can be your own judge. This is, if you're interested, and this is historic actually, with photographs of the sources, when the whole question of cooperation with the synagogue council and mixed board of rabbis, and the Rosh Yeshiva published their cherem against it, which we'll talk about in class in great detail in chronological context, the Lubavitcher Rebbe came out in favor of the Rosh Yeshiva, and this is a whole story about the rabbinical alliance and the Rebbe's talk and the impact it had.
In favor or against?
No, he agreed with Reb Moshe and Reb Aaron Cutler. He was against. And by the way, you should know that cost the Rebbe a lot of money. It cost him a fortune of money again when in Israel the question came up in the early 70s. And kol hakavod to the Rebbe, he held his ground. Money did not influence him. And he's zocheh today, I don't know, it's hard to understand. They have no living Rebbe and they are so active. I was at part of the convention for the Shluchat. I mean, I was at it through YouTube, what my students have taught me. What a world. It's just unbelievable. Thousands of women Shluchat, and they have a title, and they're feminists, and they look so modern and up to date and sneistic, and No one says boo, they're changing the world. And as Rabbi Rubin said, sometimes the shlucha is 100 times more active and better and more successful than her own husband. And you got to give them credit. Kol hakavod. And we can learn from them, believe me. Rabbi Berman, you're going on campus. You might be going on campus. What's your wife's title? What is your title? How did they divide up? How beautiful. See, you learned that from Chabad. You got to pay them percentages. My dear friends, I want to wish you a very, very happy Purim. Enjoy both days. You can have 2 days, one day there, one day here. You can have no days, one day here, one day there. But I plead with you, I totally agree with the advertisement signed by great Rabbanim not to drink on Purim. It's a Chilul Hashem, what happens. Where this came off the floor, that we have to be drunk like Noah on Purim, when he came out of the ark, I saw terrible things a year ago, B'nai Torah lying on the floor. It was Friday night, I was there to shine if they should call an ambulance. I said, absolutely. And I don't know what happened, because the person taking care of him goes back to America, and I haven't seen him since. I've been looking with him with a magnifying glass, but he's teaching in U of P now. He's on scholarly leave, and I guess the U of P is so good, he doesn't come back. I know his parents, I asked his parents, no one knows what finally happened. Afreilichim Purim, then we have a normal week of teaching, then normal Sunday, press conference Monday. And with that, we will wish everyone a Chag Hashem V'Sameach, because believe me, I soon have to start cleaning every room in my house and put up a little fence. Chametz cannot enter here. You don't know my wife. I have a wife, Kanayin Hara. She already started cleaning Hanukkah time. And she has Kabbalas, as the Rev used to say, Meminhata Shailaf Pesach, you ask the women, you don't ask the men. Quote, end quote. Until we meet again in health and happiness, I thank you so much for coming. I unanim odela Kadosh Baruch Hu for the strength. Until we meet again in health and happiness, Das Vedanya. And if you want to know why I say Das Vedanya, invest in the new volume, B'nativ Hadamama. Wow. Charlie, I still can't believe it. To get credit in this world doesn't happen. Good people, it doesn't happen. It doesn't happen.